Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us for tonight's webinar. We are Lifetime Adoption, and my name is Kim King. I am one of the Adoptive Family Coordinators here, and I am co-hosting with the lovely Libby Denniston, who is our amazing co-host and organizer of the majority of webinars you're to hear from Lifetime Adoption. And I don't know, I think the summer's making me a little giddy, Libby. But you can always reach us by phone at 1-800-923-6784. If you are new to Lifetime and want to make that initial contact by phone, feel free to give us a call. You can also email any general questions or specific questions that maybe are more personal in nature, or you just would like to receive some information. Email apply@lifetimeadoption.com if you are new to Lifetime. If you've already made contact with Lifetime, you probably do know who your coordinator is, so you can feel free to message or you know, have phone calls with your coordinator specifically. I'm sure she would love to hear from you and be there for you to help you with anything that you need. If you're not sure who your coordinator is, but you know you have one, just call and we'll get everything straightened out for you. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/open.adoption. And I believe on Instagram under Lifetime Adoption Center. Is that right, Libby?
Yes, I think you can find us on Facebook and Instagram with just looking up Lifetime Adoption Center.
Yeah, it's pretty easy these days.
Yeah.
Also, if you are brand new to Lifetime and have not filled out an application on our website, that is a very easy first step to take. You're letting us know, hey, we're here, I'm here, and this is a little information about me, and here's a little bit about what I know I'm looking for in my adoption, such as the age of child you're seeking or the races that you're open to. Little, you know, just basic things like that you can share on the application at lifetimeadoption.com/apply. So if you go to lifetimeadoption.com/apply, it'll take you right there to the start page of the application. It's been pretty streamlined over the years to where people should be able to fill it out in under maybe 15, 20 minutes or so. And then once you submit that, within a few minutes, you'll receive an email back letting you know that it did come through with additional information that shares more about what you can expect. And then once our applications coordinator is processing that for you, she will contact you directly, a personal contact by phone or email, letting you know she is now processing your application. And we should have a response for you within 1 to 5 business days, hopefully able to explore a little further. And when you fill out the application, there is no obligation. You're not making any promises to Lifetime. You're not set in stone just yet. It is opening the conversation, like I said, letting us know, hey, I'm here, we're here, here's a little bit about us, let's start the conversation. And we know that when people fill out that application, they may be at any point in the process just starting to have a glimmer that adoption could be in their future, want to know more about what that entails before they decide, or may have already adopted in the past 2-3 years ago and are looking to expand their family through the next adoption.
Yeah.
Maybe they're in the middle of an adoption process now, and you may have already had a home study done and, you know, just be looking for how you can connect with the right people to help you complete your adoption and the right birth mom to help you complete that adoption. So wherever you are in the process, feel free to ask questions and feel free to fill out the application if you have not already done so. Sometimes people attend our webinars for a long time, Libby, and maybe have filled out an application in the past. If it's been more than 6 months, definitely fill out a new one so that we can reinitiate that contact and pick up where we left off.
Yeah, that's all really great. And I know applying for something like adoption can feel really like, whoa, we're taking a big step. But at Lifetime, I often notice that most of the people who apply are just in the very early stages. They're maybe some of them aren't even sure yet that they want to adopt, but they want to figure out what options do I have once I decide I want to, once we decide that that's the path we want to go down. Some people do apply to multiple places. I would suggest my best tip with that would be to just make sure there's not a ton of application fees, because not everywhere has a free application like Lifetime. So you just want to make sure you're wise even on that front end, even if it's just you know, I've seen applications that cost a couple hundred dollars, sometimes more, sometimes less. But ours is free because we want to make it as easy as possible to explore your options without feeling like you have committed a ton before you've even decided which way you want to go. So again, like you said, Kim, I love it. It's really just about getting to know you. But I know that it can feel a little bit like, okay, I've really got to impress you. I hate comparing pet adoptions to what we do here at Lifetime, but recently I did rescue a dog and they had us fill out an application. And I was even so nervous just about that because it was lengthy and they had you like explain some of your heart. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I'm sweating over this, I can only imagine how families feel when they're filling out our, you know, adopt a baby application. So we know that you're sometimes just taking that first step. It may even be the first step you have ever taken outwardly beyond just sitting around at night talking about, well, it would be nice to adopt. Should we? Are we going to? And then you actually apply. That can feel like a really big step, but it's so helpful because not only does it help us get to know you, but also you will get to know a lot about yourself and the type of adoption you want to pursue. And then what happens too is you'll learn even more about what information do I need? I never even thought of this question or that idea or that topic. So the application is not only helping us get to know you, but it's helping you get to know more about, you know, the tools and the resources you'll need along this path too. So you are absolutely welcome to apply and help us help you better by sharing that information.
That's right. And so, attending this webinar is a really great step in getting established and kind of getting your bearings in adoption. A Q&A webinar like this is a wonderful start. It's also a great way to kind of keep your momentum going. Attending webinars is always a good thing, especially these Q&A webinars. If you're newer to adoption or newer to getting to know Lifetime, you can hear what other people are asking, even if you don't have any specific questions, but you're just here to listen. Mm-hmm. That's great, and we welcome you, and we're glad that you're with us tonight.
It's fun to have you back, Kim. I've seen a few people that said, oh, Kim, it's so nice to hear your voice. Because I do host a lot of the webinars for you know, the general audiences, but also behind the scenes with our private webinars. But there's so many people that help all of our adoptive parents here at Lifetime. And so I know that it is sweet for people to hear voices that they recognize or names that they remember working with. So it is fun to have you back on.
Thanks.
And this is fun for us too, because Kim and I haven't hosted a general webinar in a while. You know, we've had a lot of private webinars this year. So if you maybe just started learning about Lifetime, you should also know that we have a whole membership website that is only for families currently active in Lifetime's program. And part of that includes this huge library of private access, member access only webinars, as well as live webinars that come up that only Lifetime's families are invited to. And that gives us an opportunity to go a little bit beyond the basics of some of the topics you'll hear tonight. We get more specific into how they apply and how to use them within Lifetime's program, and really using the tools you're given at Lifetime when you become a Lifetime family too. And so it's fun. I know that there's some of you who are, you know, members, you're already in Lifetime's program and you just love attending any webinar you can. So it's really fun to see you take advantage of that, because I know even when you're going over the basics again, when it comes to adoption, there's just really no such thing as too much clarity, you know. And even if you know what a home study is, or you have heard about interstate adoption, for example, it's impossible to retain it all. And the more you just keep learning and keep touching base and keep that knowledge fresh, I've just noticed how adoptive parents, whether they're working with Lifetime or they go in another direction, those little nuggets of information, they get kind of stored in there. And then right when you need to apply them is sort of when they come back to memory. So the fact that you're taking time tonight, whether you're actively waiting to adopt already or you're just beginning the process, you are going to walk away with some things that maybe you'll forget about them by morning, but they'll come back when you need them. They won't be new, confusing information. It'll be, oh, I remember something about that, and it, and you'll know where to go next. You'll know at least who to ask, or how to just how to know that it's okay to ask a question and take that next step. So that's part of the reason we also love the webinars, is not only to just encourage all of you, because we know that, pursuing a path to adoption can feel very vulnerable. You can maybe even feel very lonely because maybe you don't know other people going through this. And webinars are a great place to touch base and know that you are not the only one out there with these questions. You are not the only one with the thoughts or the feelings. And that, when you get an opportunity to just, even though you can't see each other, to know that you are here among dozens of other people who are also praying about adoption and researching adoption and learning as much as they can, it's really sort of reassuring. Like, okay, I'm not an odd duck. I'm not the only one out here who wants to know what a home study is or needs to know the difference between foster care and private adoption, So let's keep moving forward. Today's webinar is really about your questions. So the place to do that is in the questions box on your screen. And I saw a couple questions in the form that all of you filled out to just attend the webinar. So Kim, I thought that we might start with a couple of these because
Okay.
I've never heard them put this way, and I really thought this was kind of a great, just a great simple way to say it. So one attendee asked, "Could you please explain the difference between foster adopt versus what Lifetime does?"
Yes. So when you adopt a child from the foster system, most likely you are adopting a child through the county social services, child and family services, child welfare, that type of thing, where it's basically like maybe the child was born with substances in their system and was immediately removed from birth mom and placed into a foster family. Or maybe when they were 4 or 5 years old, entered the school system, abuse or neglect was then reported. Those kinds of things. So these are the situations that can come about in the foster system. We are not the experts. We are not the experts at all by any means on fostering to adopt. I can definitely speak to what families have shared with us over the years. We are certainly not naive to the realities. But of course, every adoption realm is rapidly changing in today's world. So what I know of the fostering to adopt is that you are hoping to adopt a foster child who has been removed from their biological family. But typically you are fostering that child, so temporarily taking care of that baby or child until the foster system or social worker has explored every avenue that they can possibly think of to try and have that birth parent rehabilitated, get back on the right track, get stable, stop using substances, whatever it may be that's involved in their situation, or maybe they try to find any biological family member to place the child with. Once all of those possibilities are exhausted and the social worker has reached the end of the road, only then could the child possibly be available, for someone to adopt. But they don't always select the foster family to adopt that child. So it's really, really up in the air. I recommend that if families have a heart to foster, follow that calling that the Lord has placed on your heart. And that may be something you do now or something that you do, in the future, perhaps in the next season of life, after you've completed some private adoptions and whatnot, and your children are a little older, then open your home for temporary care for foster children. And if they become available to adopt, wonderful. I certainly would never want to discourage people who have a calling to foster and foster to adopt from doing that, because certainly those children are in great need of families and homes and protection. But I do also know that on the other hand, the adoptions we do, where these are private adoptions, birth mothers are choosing adoption for their babies or for their children, usually babies, usually planning while they're pregnant, not always, but usually. We don't work with the foster system. This is an intentional plan by the birth mother or the placing parent. So once she places, she will have a period of time that every state has different laws on that, 0 to 30 days, for example, where she can still change her mind. But there is no one trying to get that child into a different family or trying to pressure that birth mother to parent or anything like that. Her desire for that baby is for an adoption to take place, and she has chosen adoption and chosen you. So it's a very different experience. When you work with the foster system, their goal is to have that baby or child reunited with biological family. When you work with adoption, our goal with private adoption is for a birth mother to make a decision she's confident about for herself and the baby, and then also to help you successfully adopt from a birth mother who has chosen adoption for her baby. So the agenda is very different when you look at fostering to adopt versus private adoption.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, there's all kinds of, I don't want to say gray area, but sometimes they overlap a little bit, you know, and every state, every county can vary a little. So some of you who have foster adopt experience might be thinking, well, ours wasn't quite like that. But I think the major difference is that the mothers we're helping are voluntarily and willingly and wanting to place their babies for adoption.
Proactive.
Yeah, they're making an active decision as that child's active parent, and they haven't had their rights, you know, and choices taken away from them by a social worker or the state because of, you know, difficult circumstances that they're going through. So even though a lot of the mothers that we help are in hard circumstances, they haven't had their rights removed. They haven't been told you don't get a say over this child. So they're calling us because they want to have a say in their child's future. Not as in, you know, call me for approval every decision you make as a parent, but like they're not having the state come in and intervene and tell them what they need to do. They are the ones in the active role of deciding whether or not adoption is for them. And
that's right.
You know, so there's a difference. I, you know, this is kind of a tangent. I could probably do a whole webinar just on this, but the hardest thing I think in today's world is that, you know, it's really great that we live in this culture where everyone's sharing their story, whether it happened 5 decades ago or it happened 5 years ago. But at the same time, when it comes to adoption, there are so many variables that can impact how those stories are conveyed and how the people experience them. And even with modern adoptions, you still have to figure in, well, did you adopt internationally? Did you adopt from a birth mother who placed her newborn voluntarily, you know, at birth? Or did you adopt from, you know, from the foster system and take in a child that was removed from a home? All of those would have completely different stories, especially on that birth parent side. And so it's really good to sort of ask yourself when you hear other testimonies to go, okay, are they talking about the kind of adoption I want to pursue? And where are they coming from? What was that experience like for them? And always know that there's sometimes more to the story than just I'm a birth parent or I'm an adoptive parent or I was adopted. There's all these other little areas that make the layers of their story different from what maybe a lot of you will experience if you do pursue a newborn adoption in the U.S. through a place like Lifetime. So also wanted to give a little shout out here, Kim. I was reading some of these sweet comments. There was actually someone here that says, we are already waiting to adopt with another place, but we love your free webinars. They're so valuable, supportive, and
awesome.
Helpful, and helpful while we wait for our match. So that encourages us. Thank you for saying that. And then there were, some Lifetime families that said, I just love webinars. And then I wanted to read this really sweet comment. Thank you, Tracy. She says, this webinar already is bringing back all the exciting feelings of when we decided to finally put our dreams to adopt into action. And so they're an actively waiting Lifetime family. And I love that they could kind of put themselves in the shoes of some of you tonight who are just on that very first step, and remembering that it's exciting and a little nerve-wracking. And so I just wanted to share those because they just were really sweet. Excellent. Kim, I know that you are an expert at this question. This is a really great question. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Hopefully I am.
Yeah, Jeffrey asked, does Lifetime help provide guidance to find people to do our home study or the attorneys that we'll need with our match?
Hey, you're right. I am an expert at answering that question. I'm glad you weren't wrong. Yes, we provide referrals for everything that you are going to need along the way. I was just talking about this with a family a little earlier today, actually, when they asked me that question on their phone conference. And that is definitely a perk that we offer to our contracted families. We can give you the names and phone numbers of home study providers that have helped other families in your same state over the years, as well as once we have the match in place and we know what state the birth mother is in, we can provide the same quality referrals for the legal services that you're going to need. Mm-hmm. So you're not expected to have legal services in place and a home study in place just in order to start with us. Most people will start their home study within the first few weeks of beginning the program here, and we'll walk you through the timing depending on different dynamics that you may have in your upcoming months and which plan you're in with our program and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so absolutely, yes, we provide referrals.
I'm so glad that you added, you know, that depends on where that birth mother who chooses you is from,
yeah.
Which is why we always tell people you don't have to worry about retaining an attorney before you are officially matched. Because
actually, please don't retain an attorney
right.
if you can help it.
Yeah, you just never quite mm-hmm. know. Even people who adopt within their same state, I will say that I have walked through matches with birth parents and adoptive families before where one attorney over, say, another one that we'd refer, maybe they're both on our referral list, but one is very familiar with, say, the circumstances around that adoption.
Mm-hmm.
So even if, let's say, you live in California and you think, well, you know, chances are pretty good. It's a big state. We'll probably be chosen by a California birth mom. So we'll just retain this attorney. What if you retain an attorney who doesn't really specialize in what your birth mother is going through, or the needs mm-hmm. of your adoption require more than what that attorney is familiar with. And so we can guide you through that because on the kind of backing up a little, what's happening before you're even matched is we're really getting to know that birth mother and her situation. And a lot of times our team is in contact with her for sometimes weeks or even months before she chooses a family. So we've been supporting her and educating her and really getting to know what she's walking through and any needs that she or the adoption may have when she decides to move forward. And so we pass all that information on to you once she's chosen you and wants to carry the next step on. And so you're getting the benefit of our background with her, but also our background with these other professionals that have walked through similar situations before, so that your adoption can go as smoothly and safely as possible for everyone involved, not just for you as the adoptive parents, but for that birth mom too, because mm-hmm. you don't want to put her in a position of even more vulnerability or risk, because it's already, you know, put yourself in her shoes. It's already a very, you know, sensitive time. You want to make the process as smooth for her as well. So great topic. You're welcome, Jeffrey. Thanks for bringing that up. That was a really good topic. So, but to back up, we actually had some questions too, Kim, about just sort of the basics. Cause I see a lot of people here tonight that when you signed up for the webinar, you said, I'm just beginning to research. And so that's great. So let's answer. I got a few questions that just said, how does one prepare for a home study? What does the home study involve?
Mm-hmm. So, of course, begin gathering your personal documents, such as birth certificates, marriage license, tax papers. Get those all into one place. Maybe even make photocopies. Never give anyone your originals. That's a really good tip. Marty Caldwell, Lifetime's founder, who is an adoptive mom herself, mm-hmm. she always gives that tip. Gather your documents, stay organized, have a binder, never give anyone your originals. Always keep copies of everything so you never have to end up filling out all the paperwork again if someone misplaces your file, like a home study provider. Maybe she's on the go and who knows what happens, but just make sure you always make copies and don't give them your originals. But the home study basically verifies that you meet your state's local requirements to approve a family to adopt so that you're of age, either 21 or 25, or one spouse is at least somewhere along those lines, that you don't have any criminal convictions that could somehow endanger a child, such as anything, a physical altercation that could possibly harm a child or a felony, things like that. Now, if you do have something like that in your past, definitely ask a home study provider about that, because there are always exceptions to everything. If you have made a whole new life and that was part of the old you way back when, 10 to 15 years ago, something along those lines, it's always good to just ask and be very open and upfront if you do have something like that in your past. Believe me, home study providers, people here at Lifetime, we've heard everything. So, we want to be able to understand where you're coming from and help you get to where you need to be able to successfully adopt. And whether that means, maybe you have to wait a couple more years, or whether that means you have to have an additional reference or plan in place to show how, let's say, if you had a struggle with a chemical dependency, that you have a plan in place if there should be a relapse. Different things like that they'll look at. But for the other families that don't have anything like that in their history, it's basically just a series of hoops to jump through, checklists, scheduling a home visit, interviews together and separately, all the paperwork questionnaires such as regarding parenting views, reasons for adopting, stability of your marriage, how you resolve disagreements, your financial situation to show that you can provide for a child, that the child won't be living under below the poverty line once the child joins your family, those kinds of things. The home inspection is really a look around the home to make sure your home does meet the basic safety requirements that your state has. So if there is something like a body of water, a pool, a pond, they're going to have specific requirements about having a fence or alarms, things like that. If you have pets, and a lot of us do, they're going to want to know that everything is up to date. Licensing, vaccinations are up to date, and they're going to want to meet that pet to make sure that they're just safe for a child to be around, which most of our pets are. But if you have something specifically on your mind that you're nervous about with the home study, definitely let us know so that we can help you out with that and let you know if we've had other families with the same thing that went through the home study with no problems at all. And you can even possibly talk to a home study provider beforehand just to get that peace of mind. Home studies take about 6 to 8 weeks to complete, because you do the paperwork, you have the scheduled home visits and interviews in person with the social worker, and you wait for background checks to come back. Another thing is a physical with your doctor, primary care. If you are under the care of any other type of medical professional, your home study provider may also request a letter of approval from that medical professional, such as if you have special treatments you go through, but you're in good health otherwise, have a normal life expectancy and are perfectly able to care for a child, they can simply write you a letter that approves you. If you are under the care of some sort of therapist, then they'll want to also probably get a letter from them, or maybe a marriage counselor may write a letter for you. So the social worker will let you know based on your circumstances what letters you may need from different professionals like that. And you'll also submit some personal references that those people can write on your behalf to the social worker and say their true feelings about your desire to adopt and become parents through adoption. Marty always says it's more of a people study. People always get wrapped up around the home inspection, and that obviously that's a big part of it, but it's really more about who you are as people.
Well, I was even thinking, so our director in our Florida office does home studies for some of our Florida families, and she even I was having a conversation with her recently. She loves dogs. So even when she goes to someone's house and their dog is real jumpy and excited and crazy, like so many of them can be, she doesn't think, "Oh my goodness, this dog is going to be horrible around a newborn. You better, do something about that." Like she's going, how do they handle it? They're looking more at like, are you screaming your head off at the dog, or are you, just taking the dog outside to calm down and then bring the dog back in. How it's not just, oh, is your dog a normal animal? But like it and again, she rarely, I think one incident, she had one story for me in all her years where she just, it didn't disqualify the family. She just said, it looks like you could benefit from dog obedience training. Why don't you take this time while you're waiting to become parents to go get kind of a better handle on your dog's manners and build confidence kind of as that leader in your home so that you don't feel like your dog is just taking over when you bring your newborn home either, that you had a, you kind of have a handle on things. So it was more like giving them tips on how to make the most of their situation rather than, oh, your dog was nuts and went through a whole box of treats while I was here, so clearly you don't know how to raise a child. It didn't come down to that. It
Oh
wasn't about that.
no, that's so funny.
But it was about helping. And the same thing is too, so many people say that when they complete their home study, that they actually, even though it's a lot of work, and you got to stay a little organized and on top of it, they're actually glad for the process because you learn a lot about just becoming a parent, parenting tips and infant care, and not only how to navigate the adoption process, but then your home study worker is your advocate. Like they are, not that Lifetime's not your advocate, but your home study provider is like all about you. And you becoming a parent. And so they're really excited even to look forward to the day when they get to come back for the post placement, after placement visits and see you with your new baby. And maybe you have parenting questions where you want to ask, questions about, whatever comes to mind as a new adopted parent, that they're there to help you. They're not there to tell you, oh, you're going to be an amazing or you're not going to be an amazing parent. They really are on your side. But yes, there are some times that there may be special circumstances involved that could hinder a family's approval. And it's okay to reach out even to Lifetime and say, this is our situation. Do you think that it's time to do a home study or should we wait? So it's okay to kind of feel those out too if you're not sure if something would hold you back from that process.
You know what, Libby? Someone just asked me today if it was something along the lines of they were talking about, of course, we need to buy a home first because we're in an apartment right now before we adopt. And I just let them know, hey, you can, I mean, people adopt when they are not owning their own home all the time. So you can be in an apartment, you can be in a house that you don't own, and adopt. You don't have to have full-fledged home ownership, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, or more these days, in order to be able to adopt. Yeah, so I think that's something that people often, it's a roadblock they think is there, but it's not really a roadblock.
Right. Probably too, Kim. I mean, that we could bring in a couple questions have already popped up about it. It's probably Kim's, if Kim and I had a list of like the top question we get asked on every single webinar, even if it's not related to Q&A, is there an age limit? And so, some of you may be thinking, will my home study provider approve me if I'm 44 or 38 or 52? So, or 20 or 22? There's all even on that gamut of things. So, Kim, what would you say to someone who wants to know, is there an age requirement either with Lifetime or to be approved to adopt in general?
So most of our families are in their 30s and 40s, at least the ones that are coming to Lifetime after experiencing infertility. If people have already known their medical situation from a young age, an early age, and they're in their 20s, that's normal too. 30s and 40s are pretty common because, if they've gotten married, tried to have a baby, then have gone through infertility struggles, whether or not they've gone through treatment for infertility, tried some different things, took some downtime to really just regroup after going through all of that and decide where to go next. And now they're adopting. So they could very well be in their 30s and 40s and even early 50s. So where one spouse is 51 and the other one is 47, that's, pretty standard, I would say. That is a category that we look at when we consider families for our program. We want to assist families that we feel confident we can actually help and that can meet what birth moms are looking for. So age is only one factor in that. Family dynamics, what you do for a living, birth moms with lifetime are often looking for Christian couples, regardless of denomination, different things like that, as well as your preferences and reasons for adopting. These are all things that Lifetime looks at as a whole. I would say that most states do not have a limitation on age to be able to adopt, but different programs do. So Lifetime doesn't have a limit per se, but we are realistic in what we're telling you to expect, that hey, if you're older, we need to really get on the ball because your window of opportunity is quickly closing and, you want to adopt sooner rather than later for obvious reasons, but also because, you don't have 5 more years to consider your options if you're already 50 years old. You want to kind of move things along. In the foster system, they may have guidelines or different agencies may have guidelines on age if you are trying to adopt a newborn. I've had families tell me that they know they're too old to adopt a newborn, and I say, wait, who told you that? Because we don't have an age requirement specifically based on if you're trying to adopt a newborn. And most of our adoptions are newborn, and like I said, most of our families are 30s and 40s. And nowadays, just with, everyone's medical situations, people are learning from a young age too about infertility, or maybe they have a medical situation like epilepsy. They know they're on medication and it's unsafe for them to not have that medication, but it also makes pregnancy, it makes it unsafe for a baby. So they're adopting and they've always known that they would adopt. So they could be 25 years old and adopting for a variety of reasons, medical reasons. So yeah,
Well, and
I would say most of you are going to be in the average age. If you're somewhere between like 25 and 50, you're right in there.
with some international adoptions, I know there are stricter age limitations or requirements.
Yeah,
And so
there
I know
are.
sometimes people hear things over on that side and then they think, does that apply to an adoption in the US? But they're looking at, like you said, more than just one health condition or one age, or another question that comes up sometimes is, do we have to be married a certain number of years before we can be approved to adopt? And that can vary state to state as well.
Yes.
So that's always where we start, is just legally, what are the laws where you live? But again, it's not usually as like scary or dramatic as people kind of make it out in their heads until they get that,
Yeah.
till they get that answer,
Well, and I think I wanted to say with international adoption and different requirements and more stringent requirements with international adoption are usually coming from the other country, not the US side. So in the US, I think generally agencies are going to be more flexible than, let's say, adopting from Korea or adopting from China, where they see things so differently in their culture and have different desires for the type of family that these children are going to. So, like they may not allow anyone to adopt until they are 30, but cut it off at 45. Or family size and income and all that. So it's much more strict with international. And if you fall within those guidelines and have the heart for international adoption and feel like that's where the Lord is leading, that's awesome. But if you are adopting domestically, then just know that most agencies within the US are a little more flexible on that because we have a different view here in the US.
We don't talk about this a lot, and I don't know how this will come across, so maybe you'll have to
Maybe
smooth
we
it out.
shouldn't.
Maybe
No,
you'll
I'm
have to
kidding.
smooth it out. I don't think it's a bad topic, but it's good to think about.
What is it?
It's good to think about how birth mothers will perceive you as well.
Yes,
So
that's right.
here's an example that came to my mind. I remember helping a family who was like barely 30. They were married. They'd been married since probably their early 20s, maybe right out of college. They'd gone through infertility. As many of you may identify, sometimes those fertility meds kind of like wear you out. They make you tired. They may add some weight to your waistline. They're not always easy going on your health. And so this family, this couple was. They were, young, but to look at them, I remember thinking they were actually older, not a ton older, but they just, they weren't like a real active kind of family, and the photos that they chose for their first profile were just sort of vanilla, you know, and it was like, what are you conveying to this birth mother? You know, she may think, well, you've already retired. Like, she may totally misunderstand, you know, who you really are. But now on the flip side, don't think, oh, I need to go out and get all these photos of me parasailing and look completely young and active and crazy, you know, because on the other hand, that can also say, well, why, they're really active. Are they even going to want to stay home with a child? So some of it also comes down to what are birth moms looking for in adoptive parents? And the answer to that usually surprises people because it's not as concrete of a list as you'd think it'd be. But you have to sometimes put yourself in the position of a birth mother. Like we had a couple questions come up about marital status. You know, can I be engaged? Can I adopt with my boyfriend? You know, do we have to be married to adopt? Now, every state is a little different. So again, we're going to always go back to that. But what came to mind too is a lot of birth mothers, this happens sometimes with very young, like I'll get inquiries from, I'll get emails or questions online from people who are, say, 19 years old, and they just have a heart, like they want to adopt, they've wanted to adopt for 10 years, maybe they knew someone who was adopted, and they just know, like, adoption's in my future, and they're passionate about it at a young age. And sometimes I have to have a conversation with them about, that's amazing, and you already have your foot down an amazing path. Maybe they're in school, maybe they have a good steady job, maybe they live on their own already, maybe they're making wise and healthy choices for stability in their life. But if a birth mother is also 19, or let's say she's 28, is she gonna go, well, you're almost 10 years younger than me, and I'm having a hard time making this work, how do you have it together? Like, it may not make sense to her. Or she may be thinking, well, I have a boyfriend too, and he's not really around to help with the three-year-old we already have. So what's to say that, you know, you in your situation with your boyfriend, that it's not going to go the same way? Like, she may be coming from her own experiences. And sometimes there are just certain things that she looks at as sort of stereotypically stable. Now, that's not to say that, oh, if you're engaged, you shouldn't pursue adoption, you know, but ask yourself too, how are we going to convey the life that we have to offer and promise a birth mother for her baby? You know, how are we going to get this across to her if she's already had sort of a negative experience in a similar situation than we're walking through? I don't know if that makes sense, Kim, but I think sometimes that's something to consider, is not just legally, can I adopt, but also, am I in a situation that a birth mother is going to understand that her child would be in a safe, loving, accepting, stable home? You know, or
do I need to paint a different picture?
Yeah.
Usually birth mothers that come to Lifetime come to us because they are looking for a stable, married, Christian couple, mom and dad, or perhaps they are open to a stable, single, Christian, adoptive mom who has, you know, reached a point in her career and her life where she's always wanted to be a mom, and marriage has not come along. It has not worked out for that for her, even though she would have been perhaps open to that. But motherhood is a dream that she has and a calling on her heart. Mm. And there are birth mothers out there that are open to single Christian adoptive moms too that come to Lifetime. So that is really what birth moms value in families here at Lifetime. That's not to say that other families that don't fit within that description couldn't adopt successfully. It's just about finding the right organization to help you that has birth mothers that are looking for a family like yours, and also just meeting the basic state requirements, which most states, if you're trying to adopt together, you have to be married.
Yeah. And again, it's just, I mean, I know a lot of people come to us even on a second marriage. So, you know, even a marital contract doesn't always, you know, hold up over time. We know that things happen, which for some of you, maybe you need to hear that just because you had a divorce before, that's not something a home study provider is going to look down on. You know, and that's not something that necessarily a birth mom's going to look down on either if it comes up, but it's also not necessarily relevant to where you are now. So those are some of the things too, like on, behind the scenes, when we're working with Lifetime's families, we're helping them to draw out the things to make a good first impression with the mothers that we're helping who are thinking about adoption. So we help them make their profiles. We help them with their websites. We give them tips for videos and using social media to spread the word about their adoption. We're using all the modern resources and ways that birth moms are wanting to learn about people who want to adopt and helping you put out that good first impression. Not a, super shiny, over-polished one, but really bringing out who you are in the best possible way. And there's some details like, if you were married before, that's not relevant to what she needs to know about you today. I kind of think of it like, when you're getting to know a new friend, or a job interview or something, you don't go in with like all the dirty, juicy details about your entire life story. You get to know them and things come out. Like Kim, you and I have been working together a long time, and still sometimes we'll have conversations where we're like, I never knew that about you. So you're getting to know each other. And so that'll happen with a birth mother too. Maybe you had a stillborn child, you had a stillborn baby, or a late term miscarriage, and that's such a huge part of your story. But we would maybe you even had a 6-year-old who passed away. Maybe they got cancer and died, and you want to continue building your family. And that child is such an important part of what's brought you to adoption. But at the same time, we can help you find the right way to not make your profile or your first impression all about your past, but still include a special detail so that she knows where you're coming from. But those sort of special things I have found are so unique and special when birth mothers are getting to know you one-on-one. So, like I know some of you, may have a really extensive just history of longing to adopt. That may not all fit in one website, but when you're getting to know that one birth mom who's chosen you, she may be over the moon just to hear about how you've been dreaming of adoption ever since your aunt adopted your cousin when you were 5 or something like that. And she gets to know you on that personal level. But Lifetime helps you navigate not only putting yourself out there to prospective birth moms, but also walk through that relationship building time through the match as well to kind of help guide you both. Because even birth moms want to know, like, how much should I tell them about my situation or my past or how much my mom is stressing me out or, whatever they're going through, that we're there to help guide you. We don't just say, here's Joanna Smith from Alabama. Good luck with this match. We're involved every step of the way, including, helping you to put yourself out there to these women who are looking for you. But all of that too, like your age, I'll just give all of you a tip right now. We don't tell families to put your age in your profile or in your website. And that's because why do we need to do the math for her? If you've been married for 20 years and then you give her and you say, well, we didn't get married until we were in our 30s, and now you've been married for 20 years, she's going to do the math, so. But if you look like you're 40 and you're very active and she assumes you're, 42 or whatever, I mean, it's not to say to lie to her. If she asks you how old you are, you're probably going to want to tell her, but you don't need to come right out and say, well, we are 52, going on 22 years of marriage. Like she may assume something else rather than to just get to know you first. And then find out those details. Like we let her fall in love with you first for who you are, and then get to know you on a more personal basis.
Here's a question, Libby, that someone asked. How common is it, I'm paraphrasing, how common is it for us to see birth mothers that are using drugs during pregnancy? I would say that's not very common here in Lifetime's program, as far as heavy drugs. Maybe a little marijuana. I don't mean to speak lightly of any substance, but a little marijuana wouldn't be uncommon. And we typically see healthy babies, even if some cigarettes or marijuana have been used, or even minimal alcohol. So that would, I think, be more along the lines of typical, especially because unintended pregnancy, unplanned, unexpected, a situation, not ideal, in fact, far from ideal. And here she is, choosing adoption, wanting to make the best choice for herself and the baby. Mm-hmm. So most birth moms, because that's their frame of mind, they're usually not heavily into substances and making an adoption plan. But we will hear from some time to time, and if that is the case, usually they're very open and honest with us, and we can find them a family or a few families to choose from that have said yes, that they're open if a birth mother has been abusing drugs, or if the baby tests positive for drugs at the hospital, that this family is open to that. But the majority are not using drugs.
Yeah, and that's something too. We ask every woman when she calls, and then she also has to answer those questions again when she's filling out paperwork to even talk with a family, and then she's answering those questions again, probably with her doctor that's walking through that pregnancy, and as well as with the attorney who helps with the adoption. And my experience is that most of them don't lie about it, and that they usually are just sort of like your neighbor or your daughter's, you know, your teacher's daughter, or, you know, anybody that you could just know. But I will say, we do work with some women who have used, and they care as much about what happens to their babies as the women who have had very healthy pregnancies, and they can still have an open adoption if they choose to place that baby before a state is involved due to drug use. And so, you know, it is good to get some research and information, because if you find that you're open to that, then that could open you up to helping that baby and being such a blessing to that birth mother, who, honestly, the women that I have helped who have used are so worried about what the adoptive parents will think, not only of her, but of her baby. And so it is such an amazing thing just to see how many people are actually open to adopting these little babies that are, you know, sometimes born with positive tox screens, or maybe they were just exposed during pregnancy. But most of the time, like you said, Kim, I would agree that even in today's culture, we're still seeing just run-of-the-mill, healthy little newborns.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's comforting, because that is a concern. Naturally, people want a healthy baby, and especially if they've been trying to have a healthy baby biologically and have been doing everything to create such a controlled environment to optimize the health of that baby during pregnancy. You know, that's something they are keenly aware of as adoptive parents. But the reality is, you know, she's coming from a different type of situation, and her heart is still, you know, she has such a heart for her baby and is really looking for trust and acceptance mm-hmm. with the future parents of her baby.
Those are probably the best words, trust and acceptance. But yeah, that is a really good topic. And if, you know, I know that I've actually worked with some people who are looking to adopt babies who were, you know, exposed to some kind of prenatal drug use too. So maybe you're on the flip side. Maybe you ask because you're actually thinking, is this the place for me to, you know, have a good chance at being there for one of those little babies?
Yeah.
So, does
you know what? It's funny. I mean, I would say most people who have actually assisted babies, like whether they have experience as foster parents or have been a NICU nurse, those are the types of people that are usually confidently a yes on those adoptions because, mm-hmm. you know, they know that there isn't something to fear. And for everyone else, it's kind of like the fear of the unknown holding them back from saying yes. So talk to people, really talk to people who understand this is an adoption at birth from the hospital, not like what you see in the classroom 7 years later after the child's been in the foster system and really hasn't had that stability and nurturing. You know, but NICU nurses, they know. You know, people who have fostered a newborn that was born with substances, they know, and they've been through that, and they see how those babies amazingly meet their milestones after a short period of time.
Yeah. And for some of you who would like to see an adoption story webinar on this topic, I will share, I there may be some over on adoptionwebinar.com, but my experience has been that a lot of adoptive parents, they want to protect their child's story, whether there were drugs involved or not. And so sometimes they're cautious about having really sensitive details like drug exposure out to just general worldwide web public access. So, for Lifetime families, if you're listening right now, we have hosted private webinars with adoptive parents who did move forward with a baby exposed to drugs during pregnancy. So it's good to go hear their stories too. But for those of you who are just starting to research, it's good to get different points of, different sources of the information and not just one pediatrician or one article, from 5 years ago or something like that, because there's just a lot of varying information out there. But the best thing I always hear adoptive parents say after they adopt is there's only so much you can control with your child's health. And even if you know that there was cigarette exposure or something, there could be a completely clean, healthy, average pregnancy, and that child still ends up with autism or a learning delay or, a genetic health issue that nobody knew was possible. And I don't say that to like freak you all out, but it's just like if any one of you gave birth to a child, there's only so many variables you can control. And I think that's always the sweetest perspective that I hear from people after they adopt is, this was the child meant for me. I am equipped for what my child needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that all that to say that we also want to help you find the adoption that you're excited to say yes to. And that goes down to age of child, race of child, the health of the child or the pregnancy. And some of you may even wonder if you can adopt a boy or a girl specifically. So we never want to put a family in a position where they're saying no to a birth mother who's chosen them. We want to present you to women that you would eagerly and excitedly say, yeah, we'll get to know her better. That sounds amazing. That's exactly what we've been open to or what we've been praying about or what we've been looking for. So be honest, going back to that application that Kim talked about earlier, be honest when you're applying, when you're working through what kind of situations am I open to. Be honest with yourself. Ask questions. If you're not sure, would I be open to a baby who, that mother smoked two packs a day? I don't see that very often, but, some people might say, no, I have asthma. Don't really want my child to have that kind of risk. Other people might say, what's the big deal? And they're fine with it. So just be honest with yourself, be honest with the person who's helping you adopt so that they can help you find the child that you were meant to adopt. And that you're not just saying yes because you feel obligated, or that you're saying no out of fear or lack of information.
Libby, I know I want to make sure that people have the ability to get specific questions answered too. I know we gave an email address, apply@lifetimeadoption.com. If you already know that you want to receive specific information about a specific topic, such as budget details, services Lifetime offers, you're welcome to email me, kim@lifetimeadoption.com, and I can get that information over to you this evening if you'll email me here shortly, kim@lifetimeadoption.com. And then, of course, fill out the application on our website so we can take a look at that tomorrow, give you some feedback, help walk you through the right steps to get to where you want to be to meet your adoption goals. And that's at lifetimeadoption.com/apply. There's nothing to be worried about filling that out. You're simply opening the conversation. If plans change, just let us know. We'll note that in your file and, point you in the right direction if we are able to do that for you.
I love that you said that, Kim. I just want to make sure everyone heard that. Keep in touch. It's like we talked about earlier, it's okay to research your options. And if Lifetime's program is not the right path for you, just communicate that. Just say, hey, this is great, or we need more time to think. A lot of families want to get information now, but then maybe they're going to take 6 months, or they want to decide after New Year or something like that.
Yeah.
you can just be honest, but also be honest with those questions too. Kim, I've already given out your email to a few people tonight just because they did have more specific questions that I knew that you'd be able to point them in the right direction too. And this hour really flew by. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we didn't even really get to talk about like funding adoption or,
You know what?
Or what
we didn't
open
even
adoption
have a chance to
really
talk about
like.
How important it is that today's Libby's 14th anniversary of working at Lifetime Adoption.
You're funny.
Wow. Just so much of life has happened, Libby, hasn't it, in the last decade and a half?
Yes, actually.
We really get to know each other quite well here.
Well, and you and I have been doing webinars for a while, and before mm-hmm. the webinar, I was thinking, like, what's the common thread that I've seen in these 14 years? You know, especially with adoptive.
I was going to ask you that earlier.
With adoptive parents, and I'm not sure totally how to answer what the common thread is, but I will say something that I think is really cool about this era that we're in, that people now are just talking more about adoption, and so we are finding that when people come to Lifetime. There, like I've been typing back and forth with a woman tonight who has adopted before, but the birth mother sort of drifted away and she was actually hoping for an open adoption. I think that's the coolest thing that I have seen in my 14 years here is that when I first started at Lifetime, open adoption was really sort of coming into its own in the early 2000s, but social media really kind of broke it out. But more so what these last 5 years I would say has done is that people are sharing their stories and they're breaking the ice and they're breaking the taboo about what open adoption is. And they're talking about what it really looks like compared to what they've heard it looks like. And what you're seeing are these beautiful relationships, the potential for relationships with a birth mother that feels like a friend or like extended family, someone that you love, instead of feeling like, well, if that's the way I have to adopt, then I guess I understand why she would want photos of her baby. Now we're getting families who are kind of on the other side coming in saying, I would love to be able to raise a child having that communication with that child's birth mother because I know that it benefits my baby and that I will love her too. And that it helps her in her path to healing as well to have that connection because she's never going to forget her baby happened. And that baby's always going to know that there's another side to their story. And you will always know that your baby had, I mean, it gives me chills to think about it. You will always know that your baby had some roots before they came to you. And it's also meaningful. And so it's really cool just to see how now that people are talking more about what it could really be like, that people are actually looking forward to it. And so if you're thinking about open adoption and you're not quite there yet, like you're going, I just really haven't heard that much about open adoption. All I know is I'm a little nervous about it, or my husband thinks it's weird, or my mom keeps saying, how's that possible? You know, get more information, go to adoptionwebinar.com. There's a whole section on adoption stories where they talk about connections with the birth parent. And guess what? All of them are different. Like every open adoption looks different.
Well, I probably shouldn't say this, but let's do a Q&A on open adoption sometime in the near future.
Sure. Yeah. Tell us if you'd like that. You can type on it and say, I mean, although I feel like the main question is just what is open adoption, but I know there's other things in there.
We can start there. Sure. Yeah. We can start there. Absolutely. And talk about the fears people have and how it really looks and how the communication is like, in practical application, how does it work? What does she know about you? What does she not know? Is it confusing? All those things. By the way, if those questions are on your mind, send those to us so that we can help you learn more and ease your minds about that.
But that's
the more people usually learn about open adoption, usually the more they're open to it, as long as it's with a place that has a lot of experience and knows what the healthy boundaries are.
Mm-hmm. For everyone involved, yes.
Like
quick little behind the scenes there, a lot of birth mothers are not always sure about open adoption either. Like they want to make sure that they're not responsible for the child once that adoption is final. They want to make sure that their child is in a safe place that it's not going to come back on them as if they made an irresponsible decision. And they want to know that child is loved and accepted, like you said. But also, sometimes they're feeling like, well, I have some goals and I have other children, and like, I'm just not sure. Like, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about keeping in touch, essentially, because you're all strangers. But what we see is both sides kind of come from this place of not really sure what to expect, but I guess we'll talk about it, to they usually end up having one or two conversations, and suddenly now they can't imagine not staying in touch. Because it becomes real people with names and faces and hearts, and instead of just some woman out there. But Lifetime also prioritizes, like you said, safe and healthy connections through open adoption.
Guidelines.
So we can help you know if there's a red flag or some reason why, you know, it wouldn't be good, you know, to continue forward with an opportunity. Usually we just help you avoid those altogether before you even know about her. So, but this has been really fun. So thanks for hanging along with me, Kim. And I love all the comments and questions popping in, and, we would love to meet back here with all of you for another Q&A, even if it was just about open adoption. We could just kind of get real for an hour. That'd be fun. That'd be really fun.
Yeah. I think we're due. It's been a while.
Okay. Well, if
well,
any
thank
of you,
you
have...
all and congratulations, Libby. Thank you for your tireless devotion to every birth mom and adoptive parent that you come into contact with, and all the stories that you have within you, and the memories that you have, and everything that you pour into each person that's part of our Lifetime family. You really do go above and beyond, and I know how much we all appreciate it. We see it and we hear it in the webinars, and also you do so much behind the scenes that a lot of people don't see or talk about. So thank you so much for your many, many years of service, and to many, many more as well. It's a pleasure to work with you.
Thanks, Kim.
Are you crying now?
Now we're just getting awkward over here. Yeah. For those of you who don't know me yet,
Anyway, well, they stuck around, so they've known you for at least an hour.
Some of them, yeah. Thank you. For those of you who want to know also, Kim has been here like a year and a half longer than me too, so I could gush just as much about her. But really, truly, I will say that I do feel like Kim and I sort of represent the overall just value at Lifetime to have people who are sincere about the work that we do every day for all of you. That there's not a person on our team that I could even think of that just shows up and doesn't really care about the future of your adoption.
So true.
So please know that all of us here at Lifetime, we're not just an organization. We really are a group of usually mostly women who are showing up every day because we care about the stories of the people that we help. So we just want to thank all of you for coming and giving us a little piece of your story tonight. Or maybe you're working with Lifetime now and you're going to have a bigger part of your story to share with us. And that's such an honor. But maybe too, you're just starting that story out and you're not sure what's next. And even if Lifetime's not the right fit, maybe you'll be like the person I mentioned earlier who just keeps attending our free webinars because there's some nuggets in there that are helping them with the path that they were called to complete their adoption too. So we're happy to be a stepping stone or the entire road. Just let us know how we can help. And again, if you need to reach us Monday through Friday, the phone number is 1-800-923-6784. Or you can even message through our social media that will help you get to the right people here in the office. But we will talk with you all again very soon. Keep in touch and let us know how we can help.
Have a great night.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.